Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler. I love that song. It has kind of like good rainy day, soulful vibe to it. I always kind of pull inspiration for our weekly topics from different things that are going on in my life. And this last Saturday, I attended a celebration of life. And so it was a joyful celebration, but a crushing, crushing loss of a man that many people just loved and admired. What was interesting, and I mean, so much was emotional about the day, but I think the thing that really grabbed me was his daughter talked about, you know, wanting to be honest, that her dad had been struggling and suffering since March, and nobody knew that he had kind of kept it to himself, kind of that code of manhood, you know, didn't let anyone else know that was going on. He'd been everyone's rock, and he'd been, you know, the first one to always encourage people to do things with their lives and to take on challenges. And when it came to a challenge that he was suffering with, you know, he either didn't have the words to share it or just didn't feel like he was comfortable enough sharing it. For whatever reason, his daughter said, you know, had he just told someone, I wish he had told someone so we could have done something. We couldn't maybe not solved it or fixed it or made it all better, but at least we could have shared in it. And her honesty and her willingness to talk about that in front of all these people was beautiful. And it encouraged others to get up and share their feelings. And it was interesting because it was burly man after burly man in these, you know, very manly careers that he'd had got up. And to see these men just kind of choking back the tears, talking about, you know, we worked side by side. I had no idea that he was going through this. You know, I had no idea he felt these things. And so I left feeling like what is it that keeps us from saying what we're feeling? You know, I mean, I understand kind of the cultural constraints that we find ourselves in, you know, that we have a personality or perception of who we are that we want to maintain. And so we hold back feelings, especially, you know, for men, there's a lot of constraint around holding things together, being the rock, being, you know, the one that people can lean on and not being able to feel vulnerable. But it's interesting because men's feelings are very strong and they have the same ones that everyone feels, but they quite often don't have the language to put them in. And when they do use the language of feelings, people quite often will dismiss them. You know, so there's a double-edged sword for men in society is that they're kind of discouraged from sharing too many feelings, especially because their family quite often doesn't know what to do with it. How can my big, strong, burly man be feeling these things? But the same token, if they do express the feelings that they're having or exploring, nobody's quite sure what to do with them once they're out. And so then people tend to hold things in or hide. And then there's the other piece in families where we don't want anyone in our family to be worried about us. You know, as a mother, I don't want my girls to ever worry about me. I know my parents don't tell us things. They don't want us to worry. My children don't want me to worry, so they don't tell me things. And so in our family constellations, we end up kind of being unhelpful to each other. We don't provide the security and the comfort that we could because in our family units, we're so busy trying to protect each other from feeling sad or hurt or worrying that we don't open up or share things that are going on in our lives. And that ends up causing a greater burden down the road because everyone starts to feel isolated. You know, it's interesting. There was a research study done looking at intimate couples and at the beginning of an intimate relationship, and I think we've all been there, I know you've been there, when we first meet someone, you just talk and talk and talk, you share your secrets and your hopes and your fears, and this self-disclosure just really is what drives the romantic, passionate feelings and that sense of openness and closeness. And it drives it because when we're sharing feelings and feeling supported or feeling heard, it drives up all those feel-good hormones like dopamine and serotonin. And so we enjoy being with the person more because we're opening up and being vulnerable and they're responding. But interestingly enough, that long-term couples tend to move away from self-disclosure very rapidly in their relationships. And that after, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 years, and especially into 20, 30 years, couples tend to not be as self-disclosing as they had been in the past, either because things shift. I don't want to self-disclose because I don't want them to worry about me. I don't want to self-disclose because I know exactly how they're going to respond. You know, I don't want to share this because I don't want to have to go through the whole conversation that they're going to want to have about it. And so against our own best interest, we start to close off and not share. And so that experience kind of touched into another experience I had this summer. So I went up to San Francisco to see Michael Franti. You know him. He's a musician, activist. He played at Live Oak. He's an artist. So Michael Franti has a film out called Stay Human. And we went up to San Francisco to see a screening of the movie Stay Human. And then he did a kind of a concert to go along with the documentary. It's a beautiful, very personal story about people who've inspired him in his life. And then the music coming out in this new album, one of the songs in the album is called Nobody Cries Alone. And he talked about writing this song. He said, you know, one of his sons has a chronic illness. And when he had found out that the illness had gotten worse, he started thinking about their family agreements, their family rules. And one of their family agreements is that if anyone is crying or feeling vulnerable, someone else is going to come and sit with them or be with them or let them know that it's okay to pass through whatever emotions they're feeling at this time. And I thought it was such a beautiful family agreement because most times there's nothing we can say to make it better. But being with someone, putting our arm around them while they're going through, moving through, passing through emotions, tough times, suffering, just being in the room to witness that with them can make someone feel comforted. And so thinking about that song and thinking about this experience, I thought today's conversation should focus on teaching the proper helping skills. Let's talk about those proper helping skills. How do we know how to provide comfort for someone? What are the skills we need? And then conversely, in order for someone to help us, we have to be willing to be vulnerable enough to open up and share what we're feeling. So it's a two-way street in our lives and our relationships. How do we find the courage to open up and share something that we're afraid to say out loud? And how do we provide a space that's comforting that will encourage someone to come to us to share? So that's where we're going today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. You'll be invited to be part of the conversation, as always, at 805-781-3875. You can find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can support us through podcasts by going to Apple Podcasts or however you find them, NPR One. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and the show will be uploaded to your device. And if you have a couple minutes, leave a review so it gets passed on to other people. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. So today we're going to explore the world of self-disclosure, sharing, and opening up. And I want to start off with part of Michael Franti's new song, Nobody Cries Alone, from his latest album. Let's hear his words on this.
Whenever you stumble, whenever your problems overload, whenever you worry, know that your heart don't beat alone, and I will be waiting with a hand to hold on to, 'cause in this home nobody cries alone. So when you're feeling all alone, I'll be shining on like a starlight, waiting to guide you home. And like a candle holds the light, I will hold you through the night. I'll remain, nobody cries alone. Whenever you tremble, whenever your voice can't find.
That's Michael Franti's new song, Nobody Cries Alone. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And for the next 45 minutes, I won't be sitting alone because I know you'll be joining in the conversation about feelings and self-disclosure and how do we open up and how do we create a space where people can come to us and share what their experience, share what they're feeling, find the courage to be vulnerable so that they can feel some relief from whatever they're suffering from. And as I said, it's a two-way street. We have to be able to provide a space where our loved ones or friends can come and talk to us. But we also, when we're suffering or struggling, have to find within ourselves the courage to open up and be vulnerable to someone. And I'm going to start there because I think this is a block for a lot of people is they feel that holding back protects their loved ones from being upset. I won't tell them that I'm struggling or I'm suffering or what I'm going through because I don't want them to worry about me. You know, we feel that it's some sort of heroic act or benevolent act that I will hold in my pain and not share it so that no one else has to be burdened by what I'm feeling. But the research, we'll just go research. We'll use the academic side of my life and say the research doesn't support that to be true. That when we hold back how we're feeling, we don't share it with our loved ones or our friends or our community, and then something happens, they end up feeling guilty. Like in your efforts to protect people from feeling afraid or sad or overwhelmed and not sharing how you're feeling, and that results in people feeling guilty that they didn't know something was wrong with you. They carry shame because they weren't able to be there when you needed someone to talk to. That burden of knowing that you were suffering and they couldn't help becomes much greater than whatever they feel when they hear the news. You know, because hearing difficult news is hard for anyone. There's never a good time. There's never an easy way. You know, hearing that someone's sick or suffering or struggling with depression or feeling that their feelings have changed, whatever that painful conversation is, it's never easy to hear. But people are much better, are much more capable of hearing and dealing with tough information than they are with finding out later that something was going on that they didn't know and weren't able to help. So, two pieces. Let's start with this. We never experience anything in our life, whether it's pain or pleasure, as long as we think we will. And that's a good starting point for this whole conversation. Because a lot of times we hold things back or we prevent ourselves from experiencing something because we're afraid that the pain is going to be so awful, so intolerable that we won't be able to live through it. Like that pain of losing someone we love, the grief of losing a relationship, the pain of having to make change. We quite often hold ourselves back from allowing those feelings to come through us, the emotions to flow through us, because we're so afraid that we won't be able to live through whatever that pain is. But the truth is, we never stay in that pain as long as we think we're going to. The pain isn't easier. The pain is monumental. The pain is everything we feared it was going to be, but it never lasts as long as we think it's going to. And conversely, unfortunately, pleasure is the same way, that we never will feel as wonderful for as long as we hope we will. When we have dreams that we want to reach, you know, some sort of goal that we're working towards or something fabulous we've been hoping for happens, that pleasure, that joy, that ecstasy that we feel never lasts as long as we think it's going to. And then we're kind of back to our everyday or needing to come up with new goals. And so if we can think about that, then sometimes it might help us be more able to go into the painful or challenging conversations. And when it comes to sharing difficult news with someone we love, it's interesting that even though we fear the look on their face when we say out loud, I have cancer, or I'm struggling with depression, or I don't know if I can be in this relationship. Our fear of their reaction is generally not as big as the reaction we're going to get. and how long that reaction is. You know, if you are preventing yourself from telling a parent something because you know they're going to get angry and start to yell, then we hold it in and we hide it, and the holding it in and the hiding it ends up being more painful and more distressing and more damaging to us than the actual saying what we need to say, having that instant reaction, but then moving towards comfort. Because what research shows is that once we get the words out of our mouth, whatever it is we have to say, I'm feeling suicidal, I'm feeling overwhelmed, I can't keep doing this anymore. Once we get those words out of our mouth, there is almost an instantaneous drop in our nervous system, like an almost instantaneous relief of stress hormones that start to subside. And that allows our chest to open and for our breath to start coming to us and to, for our mind to start to settle down. That almost instantaneous feeling of relief allows us to then have different feelings about whatever that thing is, that burden we've been carrying. And it doesn't even require that the person who hears the story say something amazing. It's just getting it off our chest. I mean, there's a reason why we have those old adages, like get it off your chest, speak your mind, don't go to bed, you know, holding anger. Because the things that we keep inside keep us sick, keep us stressed. So finding the courage to say something out loud, whatever you're feeling, to say it out loud, begins the process of healing, begins the process in our bodies and our hearts. And it also opens doors in relationships that we might have never gone through. That you might have been in a long-term friendship or relationship with someone for years and years and thought you were very close, and then something big comes up. That your friend shares a cancer diagnosis or a fear that they're having, and it opens a door and brings a depth to that relationship that you never imagined being there. And so you think, well, if there's just positives in opening up and sharing our fears or asking for comfort or disclosing something that's going on, this, why don't we do it? Well, because there are five common things that hold us back from self-disclosing or opening up to other people. The first is the fear of intensity. You know, once we say something out loud, then that thing becomes true. If you say out loud, I have a cancer diagnosis, or I'm suffering from depression, or I'm having suicidal thoughts, or I don't know if I can continue this relationship, the fear of the intensity of once that comes out of my mouth, what do I do with that truth once it's out there and it's real? And so the instinct is to hold that in. The second bit of reluctance is the fear of disintegration. And then I hate throwing a therapy term out at you, but there's no other word for it. And so that fear of disintegration means when we share something that feels overwhelming to us, there is a fear that we will kind of fall apart, that we'll disintegrate, that our ability to cope in the moment will become diffused and we'll feel dizzy or off balance or overwhelmed and not be able to pull it all back together, that the coping mechanisms that we have in place will disintegrate and then we'll just become a mess. So the idea is if I hold everything in, I contain everything, then I will still somehow be able to keep it together. But the interesting thing about disintegration is that once we let that thing we fear out of our mouth, there is going to be a response of feeling overwhelmed, maybe ringing in your ears or feeling confused or dizzy, and how am I going to get it all together? Tears will flow, tears will follow. Quite often, people are afraid to say something because they thought, if I start crying about this, if I start feeling these feelings, I'm never going to be able to pull it back together, so I'm just going to hold it in. But you always stop crying. Even, no matter how traumatic the thing is that you're experiencing, you do stop crying. You might go back to crying. You might visit crying over and over again, but it never sustains so long that you can't pull things back together. So that fear of disintegration, again, is larger than the actual reality of saying the scary things out loud. Another thing that prevents people from opening up is shame, that we might feel ashamed of the thing we need to share. And so we hide it, hold it back, pretend it didn't happen, hope that no one finds out. But again, the shame just eats at us. It starts to create kind of this churning in our bellies. And when we feel ashamed and can't share with those we love what we're feeling, we tend to start picking at them. We tend to start picking fights or pushing the loved ones away or making them feel like they're bothering us because we're trying to protect ourselves from them seeing inside of our story. And so as a response of the shame, we start to externalize negativity to the people we love, which is exactly what we don't want. And then number four is the cost of change. We fear opening up because once I say what's going on in my life, then something is going to change, that I'm going to have to actually follow through with the thing I'm declaring. And maybe the thing you want to open up on is I need to make some changes in my life, that I want to, you know, spend more time exercising or spend some more time alone. Once we say those things out loud, then someone has heard us and we have to do something about it. And then the final reason that people tend to not open up or share is the loss of hope. That our fear is if we actually let down our guard, we tell our truth to someone that we care about and nothing is better, or we don't feel better, or I've tried to handle this on my own and nothing feels okay. That loss of hope can cause us to kind of give in and turn inward and not think that anything's going to help. So there's a lot of courage that goes along with being vulnerable and being willing to self-disclose and share our story with someone. And I think it's why, I know it's why psychotherapy has always been such a powerful tool, because it's much easier to tell a stranger the things that we most fear or are grappling with or are struggling with or are ashamed of than it is the people we're closest to. Because a stranger doesn't have a history with us. They don't have any perceptions or expectations of who we're going to be. They don't need us to be their rock. They don't need us to be the person that always has the right answers. And so this stranger can just hold a space where you can say the words of fear out loud, say the words of anguish out loud, and start to make sense of them so that you're able to go out into the world and continue living. And so psychotherapy is a great starting place to test out what it feels like to say the words of shame or fear or whatever it is you're holding. But then the next step is to take those words into your family, into your life, and share it with those who care most about you and bring them in so that they feel like they can do something. So the next piece of that then is, how do you receive that information? I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're talking about tough conversations and how to deal with disclosing things that are scary to talk about or things that we don't want to have be true, and how do we hear that information. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, as you know, I'm retired, sometimes, back before there was really effective cancer chemotherapy, there was a tendency to, don't tell me he's got cancer, he might not be able to handle it. Mm-hmm. I can remember one episode where there was a young woman who during my training, had a number of lumps. Her mother died of breast cancer, and the family knew, they made a point of not telling her. Mm-hmm. So, I was sitting on some of the biopsies, which were fortunately turned out to be totally benign. It was difficult for her to believe that she didn't have cancer because that's what he told her mother. Mm. And also, nowadays, when there's really effective cancer chemotherapy, it requires family and patient cooperation, and so they become part of the team.
Yes.
And when people are told they don't have cancer, and they find they've been lied to, mm-hmm. that is more crushing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the importance of fortunately we're not seeing this as much as we used to.
Well, and we have come a long way, because I agree with you. We've become a much more open society, even though we still hold a lot back. You know, 40 years ago, you would never talk about cancer in polite company or any sort of tragedy or trauma that, you know, you're experiencing. Families kept things very tight, and we're much more open. And along with our medical diagnosis as well, I mean, people blog about their cancer experience because gives them a place to open up and feel witnessed. And I think for older generations, that's very off-putting because we're not used to being so open about it. But I think, as you mentioned, you know, to be able to share it and experience it and normalize it can help through the treatment, can just alleviate some of the anxiety along with it. Thank you for bringing that up, because I think those conversations have changed over the years in our understanding of how to move through and process something as devastating as a cancer diagnosis have really changed.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm glad I'm really happy that it's makes it much easier to deal with, and it's not as frightening.
Exactly. I agree. Thank you, Charlie. Thanks for calling in. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Joe, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I absolutely can. How are you?
I'm great. Well, I just happened to have the radio on, and I'm going through some personal turmoil that's very, very, it's very, very strong emotionally, but my wife and I are in the process of separating. Yeah. We've been together for 12 years. She's from another country. We have cultural and language barriers that have always kind of plagued us, but we always kind of came back to the heart of the matter, which was we love each other very much. We both bring different things into the relationship that benefit the other. And the last few years has been very, very strong for us, but there's something missing, and she wanted to go see a therapist, and I was reluctant because she had one, a friend, that was willing to see us, but I really thought we should go to an independent therapist that maybe didn't know us, and she kind of was, she didn't really agree with that because of the price of psychotherapy and that this friend was willing to see us, and behind my back, she began seeing the therapist and working through her own emotions and what she was feeling. And she had decided over the course of many months that she would want to be separated from me and would do it sometime between Christmas and New Year's. And when the time came for her to tell me, we weren't fighting. We'd actually been getting along very, very well in the last few months. But then I was able to reverse engineer everything that had happened with us, and I was so sad that she had held on to the secret for so long, and our friendship now is growing, and there's a sense of understanding and forgiveness, and there's not really anything to save other than the friendship, but I just kind of wanted to alert you and your listeners that if there's something to talk about, if there's something that's troubling your partner or your friend, don't be afraid to create a forum. I don't know if I would change my mind if I'd gone back, if I would have gone to see that person that did know us, mm-hmm. if I'd be comfortable enough to like let it all out. I don't know if it would have saved my marriage, mm-hmm. but I do know that her and I are very close still, and we're very close with each other's families. And after 12 years of being together, I'm very grateful to be able to end this marriage stronger, I feel like, and in a deeper way. And I don't know if what will be in the future, but I do know that talking about things and holding them in and resenting people is not the path to healing, and it's not a path for reconciliation. It ends up actually just becoming something that will drive you apart.
It's true that the toxicity of the secrets becomes worse than whatever the misunderstanding or the anger was about.
Mm-hmm. And I really feel, I feel sad. I feel sad for us, for her, that I wasn't able to help her, and that we both take responsibility in us changing. And she was 20 and I was 30 when we met, and people's lives change and career paths change and things that you want from each other change. And mm-hmm. it's not enough just to be madly in love when you're younger. There's got to be personal exploration and growth necessary on both sides. And if you're not communicating that effectively, someone is always going to feel a little bit like left behind or excluded. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson that I've learned in this entire relationship and moving forward, keeping her as a friend and as a confidant, and if she ever needed anything, knowing that I would be there for her. I'm also a singer and songwriter, so I can't tell you how much soul music I'm getting out of all of this. Many songs have been written since the breakup, the separation, but that's also a place of healing, music, and seeking out other friends that you didn't really have time to meet, and seeking out other hobbies that you've left to the wayside because so much of a marriage takes your time and energy and concentration. And I guess the silver lining, you know, there's so many silver linings in times of tragedy. And I'm really grateful that you're here and accepting people's calls and giving people a forum to kind of give their feelings as well.
I so appreciate your honesty, because you hit on the head exactly what I'd hoped at the start of the show, is if we can be courageous enough to speak what's really going on in our lives, it can alleviate so many burdens. And then we in turn can be open, available to other people. Because that's what I hear you saying, is you've spoken how you felt, you've experienced the pain, you allow the emotions to work through you. And now it's allowed you to be open and expressive so other people can feel safe to come to you. Because you, right, you're exuding a resilience, you're exuding strength, you're exuding acceptance. And so if other people are feeling like they need a forum or a place to be heard, you're going to be a space they come to, or they're going to hear it in the words of your songs. And so thank you for speaking out.
Thank you so much for being there. When my album's done, I'll be sure to send you a copy.
Oh, I hope you do, Joe. I'll look forward to listening to it. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See, Tyler, this is why we do this every week, right? Like, if one person resonates with what's going on, then we're doing okay. Because that's all we have, is each other at the end of the day. We're just a big community of human beings trying to figure this all out. And sometimes what our instinct tells us to do isn't in our best interest. Our instinct says, hold it in, be tough, be the rock, don't burden people, don't tell people that you're suffering because you don't want them to suffer as well. And that turns out to be the absolutely wrong way to go, that we do so much more for our own well-being, but also for those we care about, when we share what we're experiencing with them. It just takes some courage to open up that door and open up that conversation. And we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back and talk about how we can create a space that allows people to come to us and to share their feelings. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Well, now, darling, may I have a little talk with you? Well, now, darling, may I because it won't be long before our true love will be through.
A little Stevie Ray Vaughan. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we're talking about the world of self-disclosure, opening up, destigmatizing feelings. You know, we hear a lot of buzzwords about destigmatizing mental illness and, you know, destigmatizing the desire to reach out and ask for help. And I like that as a lofty goal and idea. I don't like labeling every experience we have as human beings is mental illness. I don't agree with that. I think that most of what we experience is a normal reaction to the sadness and pain and suffering that is part of the human experience. And so feelings of depression, feelings of anxiety, feelings of fear and overwhelm are human experiences, human emotions. And to be able to share them helps other people to feel more comfortable in the experiences they're having in their own lives. You see, if we're able to turn to someone and say, I don't know about you, but boy, I am feeling really overwhelmed with the pace of my life, or I'm feeling discouraged in my inability to find the work that I want to have, or I'm feeling fear about a diagnosis and a health issue that I have. If you were to say those things out loud, you'd be amazed how many people would drop their guard and say, me too. I'm having that same experience. Or you feel that way? I thought I was the only one who felt those things. And I feel so much better knowing that I'm not alone in my experiences. And so sharing our feelings, opening up, being able to be vulnerable, being able to say something when we're struggling is a piece of it. The other piece of the self-disclosure is, how can we be someone who can hear tough conversations, who are willing to sit with someone's pain and be able to hold it? Because what's interesting, quite often when we are most willing to hear something sad, when we want more than anything to be there for someone, we can tend to unwittingly repel them away. We can push someone away by almost our overreach in trying to get someone to open up. You know, if someone comes to us and says, I really have something I need to talk about, and you say, I'm here, tell me, what is it? I'll listen to anything you have to say. And then the minute they start telling their story to us, quite often in our desire to help someone, we start to think we need to fix them, or that we need to tell them what to do, or offer them advice, or try to protect them. And as soon as we jump in trying to fix someone or offer advice or ask them, have you done this, or you should do this, or here's what you should be feeling, they immediately retreat from us. Because no one really wants to try to be fixed. I mean, we might think we want to be fixed. We might think we want someone to give us advice. In our weakest moments, we might say, oh, please, I'll do anything. Just tell me what to do. But then as soon as someone says, here's what I think we should do or you should do, we get angry or we feel resentful or we reject that advice. You see, most of the time when we're asking someone for help and we might say, I need your advice on this, what we're really saying is, can you just validate how I'm feeling? Can you just validate the experience I'm having? Can you just validate how I want to take care of this problem? So although I might be saying, could you give me some advice? I'm not really wanting any advice. I just want you to validate. It sounds like you've got this handled, or it sounds like you've got this covered. See, when we're listening to someone's issue, that thing inside of us that wants to be a helper can be the thing that makes it very difficult for people to come to us. Think about how it is that you're responding to someone and you think you're being helpful, but you really sound kind of preachy, or maybe you sound judgmental, or you're throwing out cliches. Oh, bad things happen to good people. Oh, the grass is always greener, or today wasn't your day. Any cliche that comes to your mind is probably not going to be helpful because it diminishes the importance of the thing the person is trying to tell you. When we are advice laden, thinking that we always have to come up with a solution, we repel people backwards. They don't want to open up. They retreat, or they start doing the dreaded, I'm fine, every time you ask them how they are. I'm fine. And as soon as someone starts just answering with, I'm fine, you know you've lost them. And so how do we create that space? Well, first we reach out. It seems like things are changing for you. I sense that something's different. How are you doing? What's going on with you? And if they say, I'm fine, say again, yeah, but things just seem a little different. Like, what's going on? What's happening? And when they do tell you, I just got a diagnosis of cancer, or I'm feeling really depressed and I can't get out of my own way, take a breath before you respond. And then just look them in the eye and say, this must be really difficult for you. Or I can't imagine how hard this is. or that must have taken a lot to be able to share that with me. And then just sit there. Just be there. Let the person cry. Let the person talk. Let them not talk at all. And then the most powerful thing we can do is put our arms around them, or just our hand on their shoulder, or our hand on their hand, and let that energy pass between the two of us. Because the truth is, every single one of us is stronger than we think we are. Every single one of us has the resilience inside of us to face anything that comes our way. We may not want to face it. We may feel broken by it. We may be on our knees crawling through the ground by it. But ultimately, we all have the resilience, the ability to bounce back. And what we really need in times of trauma or fear or overwhelm is to have another person witness our struggle, not try to fix it, not try to tell us it's all going to be okay, not try to make a cliche out of it, or not turn and walk the other way. I can't hear this. I can't be with you with this. I can't hear this right now. What someone really needs when they're struggling is just to have another person witness the emotions, because that's what we're feeling. We're feeling emotions flow through us at all times. And when the emotions we're feeling are fear, sadness, anger, discomfort, overwhelm, our first instinct is to kind of want to block those feelings down. We don't want to let those through. But unfortunately, if we don't let those feelings come through, then we have no room or capacity for the good feelings. And so one of the greatest acts of human courage is to allow the scary feelings to move through us to make room for better feelings, more positive feelings, even happiness. And so in the act of self-disclosing to our family or to our friends, we allow them to come into our world in a way that creates a profound bond. It may feel uncomfortable at the beginning to allow someone in to be that close. You might feel vulnerable. You might feel exposed. You might fear that they'll hold it against you or think differently of you. But that's what courage is all about, right? If it didn't take courage to speak out, the results wouldn't be worthy. And if it was easy to share feelings, then the relief we felt at the other end wouldn't be as satisfying as it's going to be. And once the hard conversation is out, then there's opportunities to start looking for other ways to be in the world. Because as long as we're hanging on to anxiety, sadness, depression, fear, feeling alone, beating ourselves up for feeling weak, beating ourselves up for not being able to heal ourselves, you know, while we're so busy hanging on to those conversations inside of our own heads, we're blocking opportunities to have real feelings of connection or joy or love with people that are right across the room from us and so wanting to connect. So have you had that experience of opening up and allowing someone in? Or have you had that experience of keeping things closed down and not letting someone in and losing that relationship? I so appreciated what Joe had to say, because, you know, he owned that piece of it, because I don't know if I could have saved that relationship, but I wish in some ways I'd been more open to processing what was happening in the relationship. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And, you know, when it comes to psychotherapeutic help, there's a couple of things that are really important. It's generally not ethical to seek professional counseling from a friend. Just want to put that out there. From our licensure perspective, we're really not supposed to provide professional counseling to our friends for a fee. Now, not professional, but more friend-like conversations as professionals? Absolutely, all the time we provide that space. But when it comes to trying to find new perspectives, to try to see issues that we're dealing with from a fresh lens, going to a stranger quite often is helpful, because it's a neutral grounds for the people that are struggling together. It's a neutral party that isn't invested in the relationship, that doesn't know you or your history. In some ways, that can give you an opportunity for a fresh start. But ultimately, the psychotherapeutic world is like a... It's like the starting point of our healing. going to a professional, telling your story, opening up, learning how you can be vulnerable, learning how to unburden yourself of something that you're struggling with can give you a way to put your feelings into words. Because we're not taught those skills. You think it's something that we all are just born knowing, that we have feelings and then you say the feelings. I feel angry. I feel sad. But the truth is we only really recognize 6 emotions. And there are 27 emotions that we actually can process as human beings. But we stay in this very small realm of 6 emotions: sadness, happiness, surprise, fear, feeling disgusted. I think I got them all. And feeling angry. But there's 27 different emotions that we can experience throughout our lives. And if we stay locked down in our world, we miss out on admiration or adoration or aesthetic appreciation, amusement, anxiety, awe, awkwardness, boredom, calmness, feelings of confusion, craving, disgust, empathetic pain, entrancement, envy, excitement, fear, horror, interest, joy, sympathy, and triumph. All of those emotions are waiting for us to tap into, but we tend to get so locked down around those common 6 that we limit what we can experience as human beings. And so therapy is a great tester ground. You go out into a room with a stranger and you say, here's what's going on in my life. Here's what I'm thinking and feeling. How can I expand how I'm thinking, experiencing this? And then ask the therapist, how do I take this story now to my loved ones, to my friends? How do I open up the door and let them be a part of this? Because I take us back to where we were at the beginning of our conversation today, that when we lose someone we love dearly and we had no warning that they were going to go, we're left with feelings of shame and guilt that we didn't do more, that we didn't know they were suffering, that we didn't know how to help, that we felt like we didn't really know this person that we had been so intimate with. And so in some ways, our suffering silently is a selfish thing because it prevents those who love us and care for us from feeling intimately connected to who we are. You know, It's the good and the bad that we share through life. It's the happiness and the sadness that we share that make us human. And that if we give the gift of sharing something that we're burdened with another person and allow them to come into our lives, we also provide them with the opportunity to feel closer to us, to feel like they're helping. But I'm going to go back again to the rules of engagement. If you want to open the door and bring someone in, if you want to allow someone to share and self-disclose with you, you have to be able to provide a space that is non-judgmental, that is not advice-laden, that we don't jump in and try to fix it, that we don't try to minimize it and make a joke about it or say something cliche like, well, you'll get through this, tomorrow's another day, you know, it only happens to people who are trying. We have to be able to just sit. And it's one of the hardest things we do as human beings is feel like just my presence is enough, that I don't have to do anything to be helpful for another human being. I don't have to have a magic answer. I don't have to have a fix. I don't have to have a tool. I just have to be willing to be there in the silence with my arm around someone. I think we have time for one more call. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist in Lee. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Elizabeth. I didn't want to get off topic, but I feel you gave me an opportunity. I was really concerned about the ethics of a therapist seeing somebody who was a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I it's not easy to find, you know, the right therapist, you know, especially, you know, in any situation, for yourself or for couples. And I know it's not coulda, shoulda, shouldn't be, coulda, woulda, shoulda, but I'm so sorry that money was the issue that prevented Joe and his wife from going to an objective therapist who did not know them. And I'm very glad that you brought up the ethics of it, because that really bothered me a lot. And I know it's too late to say coulda, shoulda, woulda, but mm-hmm. I feel that they would have had a much better chance of saving in their marriage, even though he's got a good attitude about it, mm-hmm. had they gone to an objective therapist. So, thank you.
It was, you know, it's funny because I sat with that, whether I wanted to make a response, but professionally, I feel like I ethically have to say that there are codes that we operate under as licensed therapists, and it's funny lines that we have to pay attention to, because what's the difference between a casual conversation with my girlfriend over tea and we're talking about our lives, and if I, you know, I'm just responding as a friend, is it going to be seen as therapeutic information? Am I being a therapist in that moment? No, I'm just being a friend. But if, you know, I say to a friend, hey, why don't you come see me as a professional, that is an ethical line. And I don't know the story, so I don't want to assume that I know what happened with Joe and his wife. I'm just so thankful that Joe called, because he really tapped into what I wanted to have the show be about, which is having the courage to be honest and say what's true for you. And Joe called in on the air today and said what was true for him. So I don't want to diminish that at all. But professionally, I just want to make sure that this is a cautionary tale, that we watch those lines and those ethical boundaries, because they're there for a reason, because we want to make sure that when people are coming to someone and paying for help, that it's in a space that's safe. So I am glad you brought that up too, Lee, because I think anyone who's in the profession heard that would have had some red flags come up. And I thank you for taking the time to call. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And as we kind of close things down today, I just want to remind you that there are a lot of people who want to be there for you in your life. You just have to kind of look around a little bit and try it out. Self-disclosure is a practice. Sometimes we start off, and in our zest for wanting to be close to people, we over-self-disclose. And that's kind of a downside of trusting and wanting to be vulnerable, is that we over-self-disclose, and we might tell someone way too many secrets right away, way too soon, and that might scare them away. And then there's not enough self-disclosure, that we're trying to hold things back, that we want to be kind of private, that we don't want to let people in. And if we don't self-disclose enough, then we can drive relationships away because people feel like, well, they never really opened up. I never felt close to them. And so self-disclosure is a practice. It's an art form. You have to find what's that sweet spot in the middle, not too much, not too little, but just enough that allows people to feel heart to heart with us, to feel close. And self-disclosure begets self-disclosure. That's why it works. If you sense someone is struggling, then talk about a way that you're struggling. Talk about something that you've been struggling with yourself, and that may open the door for them to also share what's going on for them. You know, you might ask someone, hey, how's your life? What's going on? They'll say, I'm fine. But you sense there's something that's not okay, then share something that you're struggling with. Talk about a place that you're really having a hard time, and that may free them and open them to be able to share theirs. And so if you'd like to continue this conversation, look for us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Check out our website. Check out our Instagram, elizabeth_TRT. You can also find previous shows at kcbx.org. Just look under the Programs tab, and they're all there for years and years and years. And you can always subscribe to our Apple podcast, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I want to close the show with Michael Franti's full song, Nobody Cries Alone. I like this agreement. I want to instill it in my family and in yours, that if someone is struggling in the family, someone is always there just to put a hand on their shoulder or to witness their pain, because nobody cries alone. We all go through it together. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.
Whenever you stumble, whenever your problems overload, whenever you worry, know that your heart don't beat alone, and I will be waiting with a hand to hold on to. 'Cause in this home, nobody cries alone. So when you're feeling all alone, I'll be sure.
shining on like a starlight, waiting to guide you home. And like a candle holds the light, I will hold you through the night. I remain, 'cause nobody cries alone.
Whenever you tremble, whenever your voice can't find the words, whatever your trouble, know that your heart don't beat alone. And I will be waiting from today to 99 through the darkness, 'cause nobody cries alone.
So when you're feeling all alone, I'll be shining on like a starlight, waiting to guide you home. And like a candle holds the light, I will hold you through the night. I remain, 'cause nobody cries alone. Nobody cries alone. Nobody cries alone. I remain, 'cause nobody cries alone.
Problems overload, whenever you worry, know that your heart don't beat alone. And I will be waiting